So
hired,
they'd already built it and everything.
that was built in there. And they hired Kolachek to operate it for, I don't know, I think it was a franchise, you know, you rented or something. And he did it
kind of how the, like, the restaurant is run now.
Yeah, but he didn't work out for him. And then there was a guy, Thompson, I don't remember his name either. He ran it for a while. He did pretty good on it, I think.
Yeah.
He did pretty good. And then he left, and then Jeff started running it. And then they wanted to sell it.
Jeff did?
No, the Revere one.
The Revere.
They wanted to sell the whole thing, get out of it. And so Jeff and myself and Alan Billett and bought the thing from Revere. And
he's been there ever since.
Been there ever since.
Yep. So what kind of changes have you seen since it was first built?
The store?
Inside the store and what goes on there.
Well, at first it just had just a few items in it, you know. And, of course, it was in competition with the other store. And
what did people do when they were given the choice between Revere Store and the Lyle Store?
Well, old-timers were...
Strictly Lyle Store?
Pretty much, yeah, loyal to Lyle. You know, and then some people tried to do a little bit of both, you know. And then, of course, some people were... Lyle Store wasn't that clean, and so some of the people, new people, were appalled by how nasty it was down there, so they wouldn't go down, they'd go to the new store. And they both ran together for, what, 5-6 years? I don't remember before it all closed. But, you know, yeah, I think it took a lot of his business away by the end. He was ready to retire anyway, so I don't think he cared. But, you know, it's increased in variety of stuff tremendously, you know.
There's very few things you can...
Everything in there now. And most of the covered porches now are closed in for the store. It used to be surrounded, just the main part of the store. Everything around the outside was empty. Covered porches that are all closed in now. So it's probably doubled in size.
No, there was a real estate office.
The real estate office was where the... on the deli end of it, you know? And then that moved over into the... Did it move into that... where the restaurant was first? I don't remember. That was over there for a while, yeah.
I think Morris said that it was when they built, like, where Jeff's house is now. It was there.
The house where the restaurant is now.
Yeah.
That was there for a while. That house was built by I think Lumberman Company. Some company came out and was going to build it for a demonstration home. Was going to sell a whole bunch of them, but I guess they picked a bad design because nobody ever bought any of them. They were going to move it on somebody's lot.
Oh, really?
Set it up for people to see how nice their houses were, and then after they sold some, then they were going to sell that. But they never sold any houses, nor that one, so it ended up just being there.
Sitting there.
Yeah, so it was just set up there temporarily.
It's
a demonstration home.
And
be moved
it
later.
Still sits there. So, when did the Gillettes move in there?
See, they rented a house up in that Panaboat house that Smith lives in, Martha Smith. I think they lived there first. They rented a house and then they moved into there.
Moved into there afterwards. Didn't know how I could deal with. I don't know how you deal with living so close to your own business. You know.
It's not a good deal.
No. I don't know. I don't think I would like that very much. Having people knock on your door at all hours of the night. How about some of the community events, like the Apple Squeeze or the fairs, or what can you remember or tell me about those?
Well, when I first came down, the Salmon Bake was down at Lorraine Christensen's on the beach, and it was really nice. I mean, it was just kids swimming in the water, and it was on that big lawn. It was very, very comfortable, and very nice. And then when they moved it to the historical side, well, it got too hot up there. Nothing to do. You're out in the middle of it, you know, it kind of...
People just kind of get their food and don't stick around much longer after
but,
that.
You know, it sells lots of salmon, but it's a whole different kind of thing than what it was. More like a big family picnic down there at Christmas.
An excuse to get together and hang out.
And the fair was, you know, had a lot more vegetables and stuff in it when I first came here. Everybody wrote a lot of very competitive gardeners out here. And they'd all bring their stuff down, you know, so you had a lot of displays of stuff, and then a lot of handcrafts for sale, and I think they used to sell, you know, I think they had used things for sale too. But, you know, it was just on a smaller scale, but, you know, those things were a lot more fun when they were smaller.
Right.
They weren't as crowded and they were much more personal. You know? And of course, at that point, everybody knew everybody. So everything was.
So you sit there and talk about the squash that was 5 pounds and.
Yeah, it was. It's changed. Those kind of things have changed a lot with increased population and having, you know, not knowing everybody when you go there.
Yeah, I know. My heart always kind of sinks when they go to do the raffle and it's not an islander that wins.
Yeah,
the quilt,
they make those quilts and they go off somewhere, you know.
I know, it's just kind of like, oh. That's just not. I don't know. So, what kind of fun stuff have you seen at the fair, done at the fair that you can remember?
Yeah, the program's always been fun, the little kids.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That one where we had the what do you call those groups that come out?
The medieval.
Medieval thing. That was a pretty fun one. I can't think much. No, off the fair offhand.
Let's see. How about your kids' lives out here? Mm-hmm. How did they do growing up out here and?
I think for little kids is great, you know. Little kids like, and for Amy, you know, Amy liked horses, and so she was just, you know, have her own paddock, her own horses, and her goats, and animals and stuff, and chickens. She had lots of animals. And Kirsten really liked the beach, and she spent a lot of time on the beach, and she liked the woods. But Kirsten was also very attached to the older people, so she spent a lot of time at Mabel's and a lot of time at Hazel and Earl's house. You know, she liked older people as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
She was more social, where Amy liked them. So it was, you know, and the boys, you know, they just loved it when they were little.
Mm-hmm.
It gets a little harder when they get junior and high school, but all of them seemed able to find a friend on the other side that gave a place to stay, and so
they can go into those extra things.
So I think it worked out fine for them. You know, there was a. When Ginger was in high school, there was a lot of drugs now at that time. So we had some very difficult times, and she'd snuck out several times, you know, and got caught and was grounded for a long time. But yeah, the drugs were, during that time was probably the worst out of the head of just a lot, and some older guys that were having parties for and trying to attract, you know, teenage, junior high kids to these drug parties.
Mm-hmm.
But most of all, I think it's been a really good place for kids.
Mm-hmm. How about, remember you told me a story about Amy and someone with a horse that wasn't behaving at all?
It was the second horse we'd gotten her, and it was an older horse. It was probably, and it might have been 20 years old when we got it for her. Maybe not that old, but it was an older horse. And it didn't like men.
Uh-huh.
You know, you couldn't, so, you know, at the time a man came here, it'd start jumping and shying away, you know, so apparently some man had beaten it or something one time.
Mm-hmm.
But, so it took a long time for it would allow me to get near it. And then if I allowed me, then I was the only man. No other men could come around. So we were having shoes put on it, and these guys came out, two men came out, and they had a cattle truck kind of with a rack on the back. And Amy was at school, you know, and so I got the horse for him, and I went off doing something, and I came back, you know, and they had this horse all tied up to the side of this car, ropes all over, you know, and the horses and all fried up in the sweat, you know, and wild-eyed looking and
scared and just,
you know, because they hadn't even got one shoe off, you know, and everything had been kicked and thrashed around, you know. But in the meantime, Amy had come home from school, and I saw Kim, and I said, God, what the hell is going on? I was, won't let us pick her feet up, we can't get, you know, get shoes off. And I said, well, get all the ropes off her, you know. So I got her all untied and got her all loose, you know, and Amy pet her and calmed her down. I said, well, have Amy hold his foot for you. And he'd take shoes off. So Amy would pick the foot up, and the guy took the shoe off.
She
stood there fine, you know, as long as Amy was holding her. But
no one
those guys,
touch them.
But they would let he would let she, the bear, would let, if she were to take the shoe off, put a shoe on, as long as Amy would hold it.
But, right, but if she wasn't there, no part of it whatsoever. How about getting the school started out here, the new school? Mm-hmm. I mean, I know your ex-wife was pretty active in that.
Mm-hmm. Well, they were gonna, our kids went to McNeil Island, and so when the federal penitentiary shut down, turned over to the state, well, then they were gonna close the school. And so, you know, the kids were gonna go to town. A lot of the parents either thought, well, it was better for grade school kids to be out here.
Well, it's a long day for little tiny kids.
Yeah, so we started, you know, trying to petition the school to put a school out here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was a lot of hostility from some of the, particularly the Riviera. The Riviera said this was a retirement community and that we shouldn't have, if we have grade schools out, it would attract young families and it would distract from the retirement setting for the retirement.
The old elderly people?
Yeah, so it was so hostile that they had that Riviera was boycotting my business and had actually told me that if I didn't stop supporting the school thing that they would see that I never got another dollar of business from Riviera.
Really?
So it was got pretty hostile over it.
Huh. I didn't know that. Yeah. They were that opposed to it.
Yeah, the board was real opposed to it. And the board was trying to coerce me out of out of supporting this and trying to get this going by threatening my business.
That's scary.
Pretty hostile.
No joke. So how did the community eventually get the school out here, especially with Riviera and?
Well, because I don't think Riviera had anything to say in it.
Yeah.
I mean, it was up to the school board, you know, and I think the parents were able, you know, it's pretty commonly held belief in education that children, small children, should be educated as close to home as possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it doesn't make good sense to put 5-year-old kids on a ferry boat to go where that school should be at their homes. So mm-hmm. if they have a difficulty at school, parents are available to them and stuff. So, you know, like the school board thought that made sense. And
so did any of your kids, were they young enough to still go out to that school?
Yeah.
Yeah. Kirsten and
Amy. Amy and Kirsten both went here.
Mm-hmm.
Ginger was too old. And then when the school opened, we had 6 refugee kids here, so they went to school there too.
Oh,
not all of them. 2 of them went to school. 4 of them did, though. So we had 4 Laotian kids that were staying here,
mm-hmm.
and Amy and Kirsten went to school first open.
How did the Laotian kids do out here on the island?
They loved it.
They did?
Yeah, they still love it. I mean,
how did the other people feel about having them here? And
well, there was
how did they come to live with you? And
well, it started off as that, you know, after this was in 1980. But anyway, with everything that happened in the war, you know, all these refugees that were being left after the war, you know,
mm-hmm.
well, I had, you know, felt some guilt as our country for what had happened over there, you know, and also I had become very fond of the Vietnamese people when I was in Vietnam. I really liked Vietnamese, their customs and their food and stuff. So anyway, there was a thing in the paper about refugees, so I called up this number, you know, and said I wanted to sponsor a family. Well, then they came out and talked to me, but they said, well, you know, that you couldn't, they wanted organizations, not
individuals,
you know,
mm-hmm.
because it was, they thought it was too big of a burden. So we talked the church then into being the official sponsor, you know.
Right, but it's pretty much just you.
Well, I think in order to get the church to do it, we had to tell them that it wouldn't cost them anything.
I see.
So then John Eddy got real interested in it too. John Eddy helped with it and his wife. So anyway, we got so then we got all the paperwork in and they set a family. Well, the family turned out being Laotian, not Vietnamese.
Not Vietnamese.
And there was 6 of them plus an aunt, so 7 counting, extended family.
And so where did they all live?
They all lived at the apartment.
Up in the apartment?
Yeah, and it was interesting, when they first got here, you know, we had the apartment all fixed up, so they had quite a bit, you know, it's a pretty big, both sides, you know.
Both sides, right.
Well, they all were sleeping in one little corner, one small room, and, you know, he had protected his family for so long.
In such a confined space.
Yeah, he didn't feel safe having them in another room, even. He went off his family right here, so he could protect him, you know. It was a long time before they spread out and started using the whole place.
Huh.
You know, it was just too big for him.
That's interesting.
But, you know, the kids loved it.
Did they know any English or anything when they came?
Frank Kale knew a few words.
Mm-hmm.
And we had an interpreter came out. who was a Vietnamese, and Laotians hate Vietnamese. And so when Cao had to, he said to the interpreter, he says, "Only because I'm American would I do this. I would never deal with a Vietnamese at home."
That's interesting.
But they ended up
now that they're over here and they're American, they can.
He would, well, he would do, you know, he was very happy that he had to get him talked, because, you know, that was why he had to leave his country, because the Vietnamese, North Vietnamese had come in there, and he didn't distinguish between North or South or what their beliefs. Vietnamese were bad people.
Mm-hmm.
And historically, I guess the Vietnamese have invaded Laos many times. So, but anyway, he ended up getting along fine with the interpreter.
That's interesting that
they'd
send an interpreter.
Well, because these people they don't know anything about the history or the culture of these people. They don't
know
the organizations. Yeah, they don't know.
Okay, you can speak this language, go.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
They don't. No regard for
it. That's why we have so many problems with our national...
Foreign policy.
Foreign policy issues.
No joke.
Why we have terrorists in the world, maybe.
No kidding. How about the churches on the island? How did you see their involvement in the community, and what, and who, see if I can word this right, how are the church's involvement in the community?
When I came to the island, there was just one church, community church,
mm-hmm.
and I started attending that with my family,
mm-hmm.
and it felt, well, that I was just newly involved in churches, and I thought churches should go out and fix the world.
Mm-hmm.
And the community church didn't seem interested in much except its own little group, you know.
Right.
Not trying to help anybody. So, you know, I had this vision of a church that would make a difference in the world. And so we started another church, and they met up above the shop here.
Mm-hmm.
They met up there for a while, then they met at the community club. And it started off pretty active. It had a lot of people in it, you know, and it was kind of an outreach church, you know, try to help people and
mm-hmm.
send money.
Kind
to
of a non-denominational.
No, yeah, send money to where money was needed in different countries and stuff. And then the church grew. Well, we got a pastor, and then of course the pastor thought we should get a, or somebody along the line thought we should have a building, mm-hmm. so we bought property. You know, in my opinion, that was kind of into the church.
Ah, I see.
Because then we started having to have money for the
upkeep and
property, and then we had to start saving money for the building. And then about that time, there was the horrible thing going on in Cambodia at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And you could send $200 would send, I think, a ton of rice delivered to Cambodia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I had brought up at a board meeting that we should you know, participate in this, and somebody said, "Well, I don't think so. We need to be saving money for our building."
Right. And so there went the outreach part.
And those things, and so the church got more and more into itself, you know,
mm-hmm.
into the building.
Which is exactly what you were trying to avoid to begin with.
And I got more and more discouraged, and you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, I give up on churches.
Gotcha.
For now, I guess we got all kinds of them. We got, what, three?
I don't know how many we have now.
Yeah, lots of churches.
And some of them seem to come up and dissolve overnight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the church that was built up there now, I don't think anybody goes to it, but 6-8 people.
Mm-hmm.
And it had probably 100 people at one time.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah. I don't even know anymore about what's going on there. Let's see. How about you and what you do here besides work? I mean, today you're in here in the store talking about gathering chanterelle mushrooms and stuff.
Right? Oh.
I mean, what do you do here besides work?
Oh, I like to go diving. I like to beach comb.
Mm-hmm.
I like to gather things to eat, you know, off the beach, or
mm-hmm.
clams and stuff, mussels, and I like to pick mushrooms. You know, I like a lot of any kind of gathering food out of the woods I like,
mm-hmm.
but I don't seem to have much time for it. It seems like the longer I've been here, the busier I get.
Mm-hmm.
Too many people come out here, I guess. don't have as much time to play as they used to, I don't think. And if it's been harder to get responsible employees the longer I've been here, it seems like.
Less dedicated, or?
Yeah, I've got pretty good now, but I don't have enough. I've got Bart, this Patrick has turned out to be a good employee. But it's not near enough for what everybody wants.
Right. How has it been for your business this long on the island?
It's very rewarding because, you know, a lot of owner people, you know, are really dependent upon us for
everything,
you know. They can call one place, you know.
There's a crack in their deck.
Whatever happens that we go fix, you know. And and some, you know, some of the particularly old ladies, you know, I just love being able to take care of them, and they're so appreciative, you know. And I had a young a man my age came out and told me, he said, you know, the only reason my mother can live out here is because you're here. He said, if you're gone, I'd take her off this island in a minute. So, you know, that's a pretty nice compliment.
Exactly.
You know, it makes you feel really good. It's not made much, you know, we've been able to live, but we've not...
You're not making zillions of dollars doing this.
We've never been able to have a savings account or anything, you know, so I have no retirement, so I'm kind of stuck working until I drop, I guess. But, you know, mostly it's been pretty satisfying, you know. I like the...
The people, the
atmosphere. Yeah, I like to be able to provide services to people. You know, I've never been a very good bill collector, and so we get stung a lot for...
Gotcha. Let's see. Think of it if there's anything else I wanted to ask. Particularly. How about, I don't know, anything else that you... Any other important people that you... Find, or tell me about Rudy Johnson. I haven't heard very many stories.
Okay. Rudy Johnson had the chicken farm when I got out here. And he lived with his sister, Alita, and the two of them lived in the house. Neither one of them had ever been married, I guess. And he was real crotchety. He was kind of a womanizer. When the women would come up to get eggs from the chicken house, you know, well, as soon as they'd come inside, and he'd try to grab them by the boobs. Brush their butts or something, you know. He probably heard all these stories. I think Vivian knocked him for a loop one time and he grabbed her boob. I rented one of his chicken houses for him when I first lived on the island. And so I hung around for quite a bit because I was working on a boat in there. And so I met him, you know, saw him quite a bit. We had a bunch of old scraggly cows, looked like they had starved to death.
Yeah.
And I remember he had what's kind of milk room up there now, was a whole bunch of chainsaws in there, you know. And I said, what the hell's all these chainsaws in there for? I said, oh, God, don't, 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 don't run. He'd always talk, blah, 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 blah.
Never enunciating anything.
Yeah, but he's mad. But what would happen, he'd buy a chainsaw, you know, and he'd be using it. If it wouldn't start, he'd have trouble. He didn't know how to fix it. And it'd just make him really fierce. He'd just throw it in there and he'd go buy another one, you know. So he had all these chainsaws
that were just perfectly fine.
Something went wrong with him. He just threw them down and go buy another one. You know,
he hated dealing with
those damn engines, you know.
That's funny.
I'm trying to think of some stuff he took out. I forgot a lot. Now I remember they had a... Rick Munson worked for him. I think John Cameron worked up there. Some of the kids that worked for him, his kids, could probably tell you more stories. Trying to think who worked up there for him. Maybe the Gordon kids might have worked up there. But he hired kids to work up there. And it was, from all of I talked to, it was a real experience working for this guy.
I see.
He was hot-tempered and impatient and, you know. After he died, you know, when his niece inherited the property, well, then the historical society, she gave it to the historical society, and we were up there putting that back porch on it had an old wooden porch on the back of the house where that concrete is now, and we were putting that concrete one up there, a bunch of volunteers on a Saturday, and, you know, Ben Johnson, you heard of Ben Johnson? Okay, Ben Johnson lived where Betsy lives now.
Yeah.
Her uncle. And he came down there and we were he drives up in his car, you know, and says, what are you guys doing? Rudy had been dead for several years, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Does Rudy know you're doing this? He got real indignant. We were messing with Rudy's house and Rudy ran
Rudy.
Out.
Rudy was
so he'd forgotten.
Huh.
Ben Johnson was a character, too. Oh, goodness. He lived in that old house that we tore down that was behind where Betsy lives, that big pile of lumber behind mm-hmm. Betsy's house. That was his house. And he, as he got, he drank a lot when he was younger, but he'd quit drinking when he's older mm-hmm. for some reason. But his house was real filthy, and instead of cleaning the floors, he just laid more newspaper down over it. You know, so this house was heated with wood, and it just had just layers and layers of newspaper. That's what he kept covering the floor with. And he had, I don't know how many cats, he had probably 20 cats down there. And he had a board, a plank up against the kitchen window, mm-hmm. so that the cats and the raccoons could come in and out and eat.
The raccoons too?
Yeah, they could come in, and then he'd put the food on the floor in the house, and they would come in.
And eat off the board.
So he's sharing his house with all these raccoons, and
oh,
and it was just filthy, dirty, you know. And I went down there one time to visit him,
mm-hmm.
and he says, would you like some ice cream? And I said, well, sure, you know, I'll have a bowl of ice cream. You know, that thing. So anyway, he looks around there, and finally he gets this, picks his bowl up off the floor that's got a, you know, that canned cat food, you know, the bowl had been licked clean, but there's kind of a little crust around the edge of it, you know, where they couldn't, hadn't got it, you know, or had milk in it. So this bowl has got this crust around the outside of it, and it's been a carry on. He opens up the refrigerator, he dollops out a bunch of ice cream, and sticks it in the middle of that bowl, hand it to me, you know. And I think, and I don't know where the spoon came from, I didn't even want to know where that came from. So I'm trying to eat this ice cream without touching, let the ice, eat any ice cream, it touches the bowl, you know, trying to eat it out of the middle, you know, and like, God, I'm going to die from this, I don't know what to say, you know, just gross. And he was an awful dirty man.
Oh, gosh. That's
he had,
awful.
He had an old 53 Chevrolet that he drove, and he couldn't, as he got older, his hearing got bad, and so he couldn't hear the motor, and he'd rev it up and slip the clutch real bad, you know. Well, the last clutch we put in it lasted 2 days, and he burned it out in 2 days, so Well, Russ Cameron took the car away from him. He started driving it.
Oh, dear.
And he dug his own well across the street from his house.
Uh-huh.
And he dug down 80-some feet. Never hit water. So he had his hole 80 feet deep, and he'd crawl down a bunch of ladders, 80 feet down, dig the dirt up, put it in a thing, then he would pull it with his truck up, you know, and mm-hmm. then he'd put it in the back of his truck, and he'd drive down the road and scatter it on the road, get rid of it. But so after he died, well, then Russ was worried about somebody falling down it. And so we took dump trucks, and it took 20 dump truck loads of dirt to fill a hole up he dug by hand.
Oh, my gosh.
20 dump truck loads.
How long would that take?
I don't know how long
it
took him, but that was a huge hole.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, it was probably 15, 20 feet across the top. Not 80 feet. It was kind of tapered like this, but it was just huge.
Huge hole.
Took it all by hand. That was actually retired. He retired that after he was had been a tugboat driver.
Oh, my goodness.
So he did this in his retirement, dug that big hole.
That's a lot.
Rupert Berg was another interesting person.
Uh-huh.
Did you find out about?
Nobody's really told me much about Rupert.
He was what, 3 years old when he came to Allegheny. Very young. Came as a baby, maybe 2 or 3. One of the stories he told was interesting. Is that he and his dad had bought a pig in Steilacoom, and so they made a little, like a little barge with a fence on it, you know, and then they rowed over to Steilacoom with this thing behind a rowboat, and they put their pig in this little pin on the barge, I think, and they rowed it back to Anderson Island. Well, they got up on the beach there, and they were trying to get the pig off this little barge pin up to the house, and the pig got away from him. Ran down, jumped into the bay, and started swimming back to Steilacoom. They had to paddle out there and chase it down, get a rope on it, and get it back. Didn't want to come to Anderson Island.
Oh, that's funny. No interest whatsoever.
And Rupert was a little boy when they built this house. This house was built in 1907, and I wish I'd have written him down, but he could remember the name of everybody who'd worked on this house.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I said, how can you remember? I said, well, I was down there every day. He said, I hung out down there every day the whole time they were building it.
Huh.
So he was a little boy.
Right.
Yeah, he's had a lot of interesting stories. He was mm-hmm. out there on the island.
Do you remember any of them other than?
I can't think offhand. They probably come to me when you're not here.
Well, do me a favor. Yeah. Keep a piece of paper in your pocket, and I'll come back and try and suck it out of you.
I wish I'd have remembered more things I heard. There was a lot of interesting people to talk to
mm-hmm.
when I first got here. My memory's bad.
Let's see, who else there? I think
Hattie Johnson, you talked about the Hattie Johnson family?
Nobody has said anything about Hattie.
They're, and the two sisters, the two sisters that lived down there in that log cabin?
No.
And then Betty Schmidt and Floriva Siemens,
mm-hmm.
or Hattie Johnson's daughters. Hattie was there when I first came in, and her daughters lived down there, and then they passed away. When I remember we took one of the daughters in, she was probably around 80 maybe or something. Anyway, she was had an aid call as a medic. We were taking her out in the stretcher, and she says she loved it out here, loved that old house.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, take the stretcher back and turn around so I can say goodbye so I can see my house one more time. You know, I started bawling, you know, she knew she wasn't going back.
Oh.
You know.
Wow.
They were not interesting ladies. But I don't see none of their family ever showed up out here until after they died, so I don't know if her kids know anything about it or not.
Hmm.
You know, I didn't even know they had any family until they died, and all of a sudden all these people showed up to get the property.
Right. Let's see.
And Hallie Green, I don't, her son is still alive.
Mm-hmm.
You know who Hallie Green was, lived up with Johnson's? And her son, I saw him several years ago, he's out. So he, but I don't know what his name is now for sure. He might, somebody else might know.
Hallie Green. Okay.
And you might be able to get some information out of Hazel still, I don't know, you're worth trying.
Mm-hmm.
She mostly talks about Kansas, which is the child now, yeah, told me a lot about Kansas, but not so much about out here.
Well, that's something I can ask you about. How, I don't know, to me it was really when Hazel started, or had her, started to have problems,
mm-hmm.
I was really moved by how many people were there,
mm-hmm.
and how everyone started to just ask what they could do for mm-hmm. any kind of help whatsoever, you know, and how is that going now, after these many months?
Well, there's, some of them are being paid, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't, but yeah, there's still.
Still lots of.
I don't think, you know, it gets tiresome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been trying to go up every night.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, sometimes I'm just too tired to make it up there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she likes to, you know, she likes rituals, you know, and my ritual has been I go up at, you know, bedtime and I lay down in bed and mm-hmm. pat her and hug her and
mm-hmm.
talk to her as she goes to sleep, you know. But, you
just
know.
Routine and.
Yeah. She likes, you know, Jen, she likes men,
mm-hmm.
you know, she likes men friends. You know, she says it's easier for her, I think, on some things with men than it is for women.
Mm-hmm.
She likes Frank real well. Frank goes
mm-hmm.
up there quite a bit.
All the time.
And she likes Tanner. She really enjoys
yeah,
Tanner.
Yeah, came into the store and he got a balloon from someone or somewhere, and he asked Frank if he could go and give it to Hazel because he thought she would like it.
Yeah, she's real thrilled with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Kirsten used to go up there every morning and have breakfast and tea with,
okay.
tea and toast with Hazel and Earl
yeah.
when they were little, you know, so
mm-hmm.
she had a really close relationship, you know. And they've been really good with all the kids have been up there. Andrew got along really good with her
mm-hmm.
when he was little, but she's always liked little kids.
Mm-hmm.
Kirsten, especially, Kirsten's been a lot of time
with.
Up
there.
Yeah.
Okay, anything else that you can think of off the top of your hand you want to share today?
Nothing to think of.
That you can think of? Okay, well, let's just go ahead and stop now.
Mm-hmm.